Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous AA meeting on air. My name is Laura and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi Laura.
Hi, Laura.
We will start our meeting with a serenity prayer.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The preamble of Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation or institution. Does not engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve the sobriety. This morning we'll be hearing from three speakers from the Sunday night group at Epsom, who meet at 7:30 Sunday night in Gillies Ave. And our speakers will be sharing their experience, strengths and hope about their journey of recovery from alcoholism. Before we start, Steve is going to share about the solution, which is what the meeting's...
Yeah, thanks, Laura. The message of our group is that there is a solution. And out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, in the chapter "There is a Solution," it says, the fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in drink. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent, and we are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defence against the first drink. Well, it goes on to say, there is a solution. Almost none of us like the self-searching, the levelling of our pride, the confession of shortcomings, which the process requires for its successful consummation. But we saw that it really worked in others, and we had come to believe in the hopelessness and futility of life as we had been living it. When therefore we were approached by those in whom the problem had been solved, there was nothing left for us but to pick up the simple kit of spiritual tools laid at our feet. We have found much of heaven and have been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. The great fact is just this and nothing less, that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which has revolutionised our whole attitude towards life, towards our fellows and towards God's universe. The central fact of our life today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we could never do by ourselves.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks.
Roger, would you like to start our sharing?
Thank you, Laura, and good morning, everyone. My name's Roger, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Roger. Roger.
Just listening to those opening words that Steve spoke took me back to the time many years ago when, in unusual circumstances, I'd been given the big book. Now, I hadn't... been given the big book because I wanted to be an alcoholic. In fact, I'd been given the big book because I had admitted in the company of several other ladies, as it happened, in their lounge, that my life was unmanageable. And that's what I identified after listening to their sharing. And when they said, Roger, it gets worse before it gets better, it was like the doors of hell clanged shut behind me, because I knew what they meant, that there was more to come. Anyway, it was followed by, fortunately, someone said, would you like to try this program? And I was a bit bewildered because I didn't know what program was. I had actually read about the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous because I'd read a newspaper article years prior, I think written by Jack Robertson in the States. And that was tucked away in the back of my mind. So when they said, would you like to try this program, instead of saying, no, it's not me, I haven't got the problem, it's my wife, you know. And that's why I started going to these meetings because not only was my life unmanageable, my marriage was unmanageable. Anyway, so they gave me a copy of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's fair to say that that changed my life completely. I took it home and I started reading it, and I was fascinated. I was absolutely fascinated by it. And at the time, I was managing a bar for a non-profit organisation. The second night, I couldn't get home fast enough, and I began reading it very late at night. And in amongst the story section of that big book, I identified who the hell I was for the very first time in my life. And not only that, I fully understood also for the first time in my life why my father had drunk the way he had drunk, and I had no idea. I only saw the physical reaction that booze brought out of him. I never understood what was happening on the inside. So I stopped drinking abruptly because I knew if I drank another drop, I'd be a goner. It was a spiritual awakening of a not very nice kind. It was a devastating, had a devastating effect on me internally because I saw my life stretched in front of me, having to say no to a drink. And I also realised I'd never ever said no to a drink. I was powerless when it came to, I'd always been brought up like a polite little boy. It was always good to say yes, thank you. And that's what I did with some proficiency when it came to booze, because it gave me a sense of belonging that I craved. It gave me a sense of camaraderie. And booze is not only the elixir of life for those that whose lives depend upon it, but it's also provides the great rationalisation that everything is right with the world after you've had a few. And I've learned everything about my living and how I should live through living the 12 steps and from listening to other fellow recovering alcoholics share their experience, strength and hope. I never knew why I drank the way I did. I never knew I had defects of character. I never knew that resentments were the number one enemy of an alcoholic. I never knew why nerds always used to get up my nostril and I couldn't handle them. It was simply because I'd never grown up. And I found that when I had a few, it was marvellous. And I always thought I was just a social drinker. But I chose my drinking sessions carefully. I drank with like-minded people. I loved the spontaneous sessions. And I also found it very difficult. You know, I would drink through the night if the company was sociable. And then I'd suffer like hell in the morning. And for 3 or 4 days or whatever it took, I'd keep away from it. And then I'd look forward to the next session, as it were. I wasn't a continual drinker, but I certainly was a binge drinker. But I'm very grateful because I didn't reach that stage that many do. I didn't lose my job, I didn't lose the home, I didn't lose the family. But I lost myself. I knew that. I knew that instinctively, that I was showing people on the outside what I thought they wanted to see. And they weren't seeing Roger at all, they were just seeing a shell and a facade. So my long journey in recovery began, and I had to learn that you do them the steps in order that they are written. 1, 2, and 3. I learnt that I was quite shameful that I didn't realise I distrusted so many people because I had to learn in step 2 where it says it came to believe that a power greater than myself would restore me to sanity. I actually had to understand that and trust that. And then I had to make a decision about my daily life. And then I had to move on to those other steps and clean house and then start helping others. But I found I was very lucky that I got a sponsor, and I instinctively knew that I couldn't glad-hand him. I couldn't manipulate him. I couldn't say things that he wanted to hear. He would just say to me, "Roger, have you made a decision?" And it was instinctive. I knew what he was talking about, that I had to start doing something. And so life started throwing a few curveballs at me, and I couldn't handle it. And I literally had to stop fighting everything and everyone and get on my knees and ask for help. And I found a strange thing started to occur. Those things that I thought were going to kill me or destroy me didn't, and I could handle them. And those things that I thought I always handled with ease, well, I no longer handled with ease because I had approached them quite differently. But thanks to the 12 steps, and particularly doing service in the fellowship, I've never shirked from playing my part in stepping up to the mark and helping others and taking on positions within Alcoholics Anonymous from within our service structure. And that's kept me close because I'm a long way away from my last drink, but as others have reminded me, it doesn't necessarily mean I'm a long way away from my next drink. And so I pay my dues. I make sure that I have enough insurance in the bank, as it were, by staying close to the fellowship and making sure I always identify who I am. And I have no trouble sharing my experience of a recovering alcoholic with anyone. And I found it stood me in great stead. And I wouldn't be able to lead the life I have today with a wonderful marriage, a outlook on life that I never ever thought was possible. And I literally owe everything to that wonderful fellowship called Alcoholics Anonymous.
Thank you, Roger.
Thanks, Roger.
Melissa, would you like to share?
Good morning, everybody. My name is Melissa, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Melissa.
By the time I picked up my first drink, I thought it was the best thing that had ever happened to me. I couldn't wait to get it down my throat. The effect was so sensational. It was amazing. I just couldn't believe that I could ever feel this way. And the next day was the complete opposite. I felt... Oh, it was awful. I just felt horrendous, and I couldn't understand it. The newfound alcohol that I'd found made me feel so good, and it also made me feel so bad. And I remember saying to myself, I promised myself, and I meant it. I really meant it. I said, I was lying in bed. I clearly remember the day. And I promised myself, I said, I'm never going to drink again. I'm never going to drink again. I meant it because I felt so bad. And by the time the hangover wore off, I couldn't wait to have another drink. And that was my life for a while, a good few years, on this merry-go-round. It was like heaven and hell, really. And by the time my drinking ended, I couldn't even enjoy it anymore. I couldn't even get any enjoyment out of it. And there's a saying, and a lot of people say this, you know, when I was controlling my drinking, I wasn't enjoying it. And when I was enjoying it, I wasn't controlling it. And I think, you know, I just got to a stage where I became terrified, terrified of myself. What was I going to do next? Because for me, alcohol was like rocket fuel for me. Once it entered me, my system, I was gone. I was like a space rocket, you know. There was no turning back. And that was the other thing. I didn't care what was going to happen when I had a drink. And I drank regardless, whether I was happy, sad, mad, glad. I had to have a drink. So by the time I ended up... at the end of my drinking, I... was isolated. I couldn't work. I couldn't socialise. I pretty much just couldn't function. But and I was at home pretty much with closed curtains and kept drinking. I just kept drinking until I was in so much pain and willing to do whatever it took. I needed help. I reached out to my family who had been waiting for so long for me to finally admit that I needed help. You know, I'd got help at another time in my life, and I wasn't ready. And by this stage, I was ready. I was ready to do anything. The pain was just unbearable, and so I thought I'll go to any lengths to fix myself. And I'd been to AA and stopped going to AA. And that's when it got really bad, because I drank again. I couldn't understand it. And then I learnt that I needed to keep going to AA. You know, that's how serious it was. I knew that if I stop going to AA, I'm going to naturally drink again. I needed to be constantly reminded of what I was and what I was dealing with and what I needed to do to keep me sober. You know, it's cunning, baffling and powerful. And I did struggle for a long time with, I was quite young as well. I struggled because everyone else I knew was out there partying and I was in AA. It was so depressing. You know, and I struggled with the acceptance. Like, I knew that I was alcoholic, but accepting it was... It took me time to accept it, but there were also, and I struggled with the being part of this fellowship thing. I really struggled with that, but there were paradoxes to it. I would also feel amazing being part of a fellowship. I felt like I wasn't alone anymore. I didn't have this fruitcake head. I wasn't the only one that felt this way or had this madness in between my ears. There were other people that felt like me too. And another thing was I was so relieved to be not drinking because I was so... I couldn't stop drinking. And I was so... I couldn't enjoy it anymore. I was so relieved to not be drinking. So... I related to a lot of the things in the big book... the jaywalking, doing the same. Well, there's a few things. If you ever read the book, you'll see for yourself. There's one about jaywalking, about doing the same thing over and over. And there was another bit that said the greatest obsession of every abnormal drinker was that somehow, someday, they'll beat the game. And that was me. I was always trying to beat the game until in the end I just had to accept it. A spiritual solution. I had to accept help. I had to do anything other than what I was doing. I had to do something because I just couldn't do anything else. And I'd tried so many things. Believe you me, you know, I had tried it. I'm a very determined person. If I want something or I want to make it happen, I'll make it happen. But this alcoholism thing was beyond me. It just crippled me. And I've come to accept spiritual help, came to believe in a power greater than myself, which I choose to call God. It's not something I completely understand. It's something that I experience now. It's a freedom for me, freedom from self. I've learnt to, like Roger said, I've learnt to help others. That's a miracle for me. I was never interested in helping anybody else. I was always about me, me, me. You know, it's a very a characteristic of the alcoholic is self-centeredness. It was all about me and more for me, you know. So I've been able to do service, think of others. So many little miracles have happened that I thought would never be possible by simply attending meetings, having a sponsor and accepting help and it's given me freedom. Yeah, and it's not even a life I would have... Well, I didn't choose it. I wouldn't have chosen spiritual life. It's been given to me and it's a gift. So... if you're having trouble with your drinking and you seriously consider coming to a meeting and give it a go. Just give it a go. So thanks very much.
Thanks, Melissa.
Steve, would you like to share?
Oh, thanks, Laura. My name's Steve. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Steve.
And I discovered alcohol very early in my teens, and I loved it. And I had a lot of fun with it. And there was a pattern that developed with my drinking that stayed with me right to the very end. And I finished drinking in my late 20s, so I didn't have a very long drinking career. But I was a guzzler, and I just guzzled booze, and I loved it. And the effect was profound on me. It just gave me an absolute sense of, as Melissa said, a sense of freedom. It just took everything away. It made life bearable, and I loved it. And I did it as many times as I could. And as well as being a guzzler, I was a blackout drinker. And I thought that was normal. So all the behaviour that went with my drinking when I first started, what I found out at Alcoholics Anonymous, it was symptoms of alcoholism, had a sense of normality about it for me. And so I would drink, and something in my brain would go, let's get absolutely blind drunk. And I'd go, what a great idea. And I would guzzle booze until I passed out. And that's what happened. In blackout, I did all these sorts of things that wasn't part of my normal character when I was sober. And sometimes I'd be the hero of the day and the life and soul of the party and a great person to be around, and other times I'd be terrible. I'd be really argumentative and get up to things that I just wouldn't do, and people would tell me, and I remember inside I would just cringe inside about some of the things I got up to, and I would think externally I'd try to laugh it off and, you know, make it a bit of a joke, but inside I would cringe and I'd go, really? I don't normally behave like that. That's not really the person who I am. You know, so I would resolve not to be like that next time I drank, and inevitably it would happen. I had no control over what my behaviour was going to be. And as time went on, it became more and more random. And as my behaviour deteriorated, my friends changed as well. And so there was a natural deterioration of my life, because as people drifted out, other people drifted in, and I just kept adjusting myself to the type of people that I was mixing with. And so at the end of it all, there was a sense of normality about my behaviour and my drinking, because it had something that had been with me for a long time. And it was like leading a double life. I ended up with a really good job, and career-wise I did quite well. So I achieved quite a bit in one area, and with my drinking I achieved as well, but in a different kind of way, you know. So, and I was really strong-willed and incredibly determined, and I applied that to my work, you know, life, and was quite successful with it. And what happened for me is that the booze completely took over my life, and I could see that the whole thing was unravelling. And I could see that I was going to lose my job, and I knew that if I lost my job, there were a couple of things. I'd have no money, and I couldn't keep living the way I was living, with drinking and partying, you know, all the time. My weekends grew from 2 to 3 to 4 days, so it was from Friday, Saturday, it was Thursday, Wednesday, Tuesday, so the weekend was quite long. And but I just knew it was all unravelling, and also knew, you know, it affected my ego and all that kind of stuff that went with it, with all that. And so my solution was to put some control into my drinking. So I believed with every ounce of my fibre that if I applied my determination and self-will and drive like I did to my work, I'd be able to control the drinking, and it makes logical sense. So I started about this control, and oh God, it was terrible. You know, all the fun sort of started to slip away from my drinking, because I was thinking, oh, I'll have vodka, and then I'll have a water, and then I'll have a beer, and then I'll have a water, and then I'll have a glass of wine, and then I'll have a Coke, and I'll have this. And the whole, it became really hard work, you know. And I would look at other people that I was out within the clubs, and they weren't having this mental gymnastics about their drinking. They were having a couple of drinks and enjoying themselves, and I was sitting in a corner in this whole mental obsession about my drinking and how much I was drinking and trying to control my behaviour and the blackout and all that kind of stuff, and it was just too hard. And eventually, it gave way, and I didn't come looking for help at Alcoholics Anonymous. I bumped into somebody and was talking to them one day and blurted out something about I was trying not to drink. And he was a member of AA, and he talked about he too was trying to do the same thing. And I've got to say, the absolute relief of talking to another person who was trying to do exactly the same that I was trying to do, you know, control your drinking and all that kind of stuff. And it was an absolute relief, because I believed I was the only one that was trying to do that, because all my other friends didn't have this mental obsession with it. And you know, I ended up by sitting at home drinking by myself, trying to control it. I mean, it's all quite pathetic when you think about it. But, you know, it was a huge thing at the time. And he asked me to come along to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was really... I came along for two things. I really didn't have a lot of people around me at the time, so I'd moved on to another group of people, and, you know, I didn't have a lot of friends, and I was sitting at home drinking quite a bit by myself, and I thought I'd go along and have a look at this thing. And I remember sitting there feeling incredibly intimidated and thinking, surely to God my drinking hasn't got this bad. Surely it doesn't need this, you know. And every ounce of me said, run for the door, get out of here while you can. But I don't know, I guess in my heart of hearts, I knew I was at the right place, because when other people spoke, I identified what they were talking about. When they talked about their drinking, I understood what they were talking about, particularly when they talked about blackouts and getting up to all sorts of behaviour. And I really identified with that. So I think I came back on that strength, really, and I struggled for a long time. I didn't get sober straight away. I had a year in AA of drinking regularly, and really good thing that AA's just said to me, keep coming back. And you know, they were really smart. They knew that if I was in AA drinking, I had a chance. If I was outside of AA drinking, I had no chance at all. So these people took me under their wing, and they encouraged me to keep coming back, because they could see more to me than I could see about myself. My self-esteem had completely gone, and my self-worth had gone, and I particularly didn't like myself, and I was just really just an empty shell, and found it really hard to admit that. So I hung around for a while, and eventually my drinking took off on a huge bender, and it was the fear that drove me to the end of my drinking. In the middle of a blackout, I came to and realised that I couldn't stop drinking, and it was just a gut-wrenching fear that the great me couldn't control it, and I conceded defeat. And the AAs couldn't get me to that place. I had to get there myself, but once I got there, the AAs I knew at the time, they started showing me how I could live one day at a time without drinking through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And there's a whole pile of stuff that goes with that. And I found it really difficult, and I didn't want to do it, but I had to. And in doing it, my life has improved. The quality of my life has improved considerably. And that's why I keep coming back. So thanks, Laura.
Thanks, Dave.
This brings us towards the end of our meeting. Our speakers this morning have been from the Sunday Night Epsom group, who met at 7:30. It's in Gillies Ave. And their message is, there is a solution. And there certainly is. If you have a problem with alcohol and you want help, you can phone 0800 AA Works, which will put you in contact with an AA member in your local area. There are over 100 AA meetings each week within the Greater Auckland area. For more information, log on to aa.org.nz. Thank you for listening this morning. We will be here again next Sunday at 10:45 a.m. and our AA meeting will have a Te Reo Pacifica theme. We will now close our meeting with the Serenity Prayer.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
You're on 104.6 FM with the Alcoholics Anonymous AA meeting on air. You can hear this program again at planetaudio.org.nz/AA meeting on air. Thanks, everyone.
your language.